Good morning, and welcome to another installment in our Medical Ethics, Medical Halacha series. A particularly special welcome for the brave doctors who you know.
When you was a rhetorical question.
Sorry?
When you was a rhetorical
question. Right.
We just want to find the doctor.
Okay, you hope it's a rhetorical question at any rate. The topic is indeed charging for healthcare. What I'm doing this morning is an abridged version of something that I did in two sessions at Shari Shamayim earlier this year, because I really wanted to fit this into one session. But if you signed up and put your email address down, then I'll send you the link for the recordings from the longer version. What I've taken out is not elements that affect the practical halacha as much as some of the detours, which I'll note as we go along, for subtopics. We see in front of you, and for those who are concerned that I'm actually going to say something terrible about doctors getting paid, not to worry, because I give you my standard introduction to all halacha shiurim, which is that for practical questions, go to your shul rabbi. What I say is not intended as psak in any way, shape, or form. I'll also note that I sent out an email to the email list for the medical halacha programs in general last week, the week before, calling for topics for next year. We're now planning for next year's topics. God willing, this time we will get in the application in time for CME approval as well. So if you have any thoughts about things you'd like to hear, please do email me. You see three vignettes in front of you on the sheet. First one is Sarah, a fledgling dentist, is setting up her practice and trying to figure out what to charge her patients for routine dental exams. From a halachic perspective, what factors should she consider? How does she figure out what to charge? Can she simply say, well, I need this in order to pay rent for my office, I need this in order to pay off my student loans, I need this in order to be able to put food on the table, therefore this is what I'm going to charge? Can she say, well, this is what everybody else charges, therefore it's what I'm going to charge? I'm going to charge as much as the market can bear. How do you make this this calculation for what to charge? My choice of dentists was not meant to offend the dentist present. It was simply because, since we're living in an OHIP society, I was trying to come up with a particular case in which I know something is not reimbursed and something is not already governed in the system. But feel free to substitute whatever you like for any other society. The second question: Paul is a dentist who works in a disadvantaged area, and he's frequently faced with patients who say they can't pay their bills. So is he permitted to refuse to treat them, to say, well, if you're not going to pay, then I'm not going to treat you? So our first question is, how much can you charge? Our second is, are you actually allowed to withhold medical treatment, life or death or otherwise, if the patient isn't going to pay? And then the third, Lisa, an OBGYN, it takes call on Shabbos at the hospital. And we're talking about a case where she's doing so appropriately. There are no questions. Pikuach nefesh, that's not our question here. She's doing nothing wrong by taking call. But the question now is that she's supposed to be paid to be on call at the hospital. Is she allowed to accept the money? So those are the three questions I'd like to address this morning. We begin again with our first one. What factors should Sarah consider when she decides what her rate is going to be? And I'm not talking about practical things that she should consider. I'm asking from a halachic perspective, what should she consider when deciding how much she should charge? What would you say? Yes?
What the going rate is.
It's one possibility.
What you mentioned before, what everybody else is charging.
What everybody, the going rate. That's a practical consideration. What halachic considerations might she have might she keep in mind? Well, let's take a look. Take a look at source number one, please, which is a halacha in Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law. Harofei asurli tol schara chachma v'alimud. A doctor is not allowed to take payment for, now the next two words are tricky, it doesn't refer to his own knowledge and learning, that's not what it's saying. What it's talking about is the knowledge that the doctor conveys, the teaching the doctor does. So in other words, you could misread this line to say the doctor is not allowed to take payment for reimbursing his tuition. That's not what it's saying. What it's saying is the doctor is not allowed to take payment for teaching the patient, advising the patient. But the doctor is allowed to take payment for the doctor's own strain or time lost, as I added in brackets, from other remunerative pursuits. The doctor says, you know, I could have been betting on the horses. I could have been, I don't know what, something else. I could have been day trading. I had other things I could have been doing with my time. Instead, I took care of the patient. Therefore, I want to be paid for the money I would have earned at this other pursuit. The Shulchan Aruch says, I'm not allowed to take payment for medical advice, only for strain and for not working another job that would have taken me away from this. Why does the Shulchan Aruch say this? What is motivating the Shulchan Aruch in saying that when you advise a patient, when you say to the patient, I think that you should, you know, take walks every day, I think that you should take this antibiotic or whatever it is, why is the doctor not allowed to take payment for that? Harold. Kiani Hashem Rofecha, so Hashem says, I am your doctor, therefore what?
Hashem should heal you.
Well, in that case, why'd you go to the doctor in the first place?
That's why he's
you're the agent of Hashem.
He feels like he's not allowed to take money for it.
You're the agent of Hashem, and therefore you're not entitled to take payment for it. So Shluchei Mitzvah cannot take money in general for being the agent of Hashem. That's a very risky thing to say. Right? We should apply that in a lot of other areas as well. And maybe we should. But yes, Leah.
Right?
We're kind of into the Moal case. Yeah.
The exact place in it, but just generally you should be looking after your fellow man, and if you have something to help them, it shouldn't be by you gaining something, it should just be, you know,
right.
Looking after your fellow man.
Right. So another approach would be to say, you have an obligation to other human beings. The other human being is in need, and therefore You shouldn't be able to charge them money in order to provide assistance. It's a second possibility. The way the Gemara looks at it, it seems, is that what you are doing, it's sort of a variation on the idea, not of being Hashem's shaliach exactly, his agent exactly, and not exactly what Leah is saying in terms of you're helping somebody else, but I think it actually has elements of both. Take a look at source number 2, a Mishnah in Nedarim. Hamudar hana'ame chaveiro. If a person takes a vow, I am not going to benefit so and so. There's some kind of a fight, and he says, I am not going to provide benefit to somebody. Merapehu refuas nefesh, avolo refuas mamon. He's allowed to heal his person, just not his property. I can't take care of his property, but I am allowed to actually heal that person. And the idea behind this, the idea behind saying that that the vow not to help somebody does not preclude medical treatment is understood to be because he is mushba va'omed. The doctor has already sworn to heal others, not in the Hippocratic Oath, but at Har Sinai. By accepting the Torah, we accepted an obligation to aid others. Whether I view that obligation as because of lo samod al dam rayacha, don't stand by while somebody else's blood is shed, or vashevo so lo, like the obligation to restore someone's lost property to him, or v'cheyachicha imach, your brother shall live, all the different possible scriptural sources for your obligation to look after the health of others, what it means is, fundamentally, that you can't swear you're not going to heal somebody because you have a prior oath that you are going to heal them. You have an obligation to heal them. You have a mitzvah of healing them. And since it is a mitzvah, take a look at source number 3, which is from a separate context, but we apply it here. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, the Gemara in Bechoros, Da Amar Kra. Rav Yehuda there, quoting Rav, is talking about teaching Torah and taking money to teach Torah. And he says, you're not allowed to do that. Right? You all came free to the class today. There was no fee. That was on the flyer. There is no right to claim money for teaching people Torah because the Pasuk says, Hashem said, Moshe says to the Jews, Moshe says to the Jews, I have taught you, and what the Gemara extrapolates from there is, you shall teach as I have taught. Moshe doesn't bill the Jews for his teaching, so too, you shall not bill others when you teach them. And so what we say is, the Gemara says, in terms of teaching Torah, just like Moshe taught for free, you shall teach for free. And what the Shulchan Aruch does is to take that a step further and say it's not a function of teaching Torah, it's a function of teaching Torah being a mitzvah. In other words, this isn't, we don't say that that Gemara in Bechoros, in source number 3, is limited to teaching Torah, that that's a unique mitzvah that has to be done for free, but rather we say that any mitzvah must be done for free. So whether that's teaching Torah, or whether that is offering medical care to somebody, either way, you are not entitled, says the Shulchan Aruch, to charge people. That's the Shulchan Aruch logic. Now, I could very easily see the argument that the Gemara in source number 3 quoted a pasuk about teaching Torah specifically, and therefore you shouldn't extrapolate to other mitzvos. And there are those who make that argument. But the Shulchan Aruch doesn't think so. The Shulchan Aruch believes that that just as you can't teach Torah for money, so too you can't offer medical care for money. Albert, and then, yeah.
What's the boundary of teaching?
Right. So if this were a shiur on teaching Torah, I would be prepared to answer that question well. In fact, there is discussion about that in terms of different kinds of Torah. And teaching somebody Torah that is, so to speak, their necessity versus teaching something beyond that. There's more to say about that. But I am not prepared to respond right now. But for those who signed in, you will get that as part of the follow-up. I'll give a little bit more detail there. Yes?
Maybe you'll address this later, but I don't understand the concept of lost time for doctors, because most doctors are not taking away time from their real job as accountants or construction workers to...
Right. Correct. So we're going to get to that in a bit, but I will note that you're 100% right. From a sociological standpoint, things have changed. In other words, the world in which we live today, in which a physician is a full-time physician, was not the world of 2,000 years ago, where a physician may have done several different things, and bloodletting or whatever it was only one of them. So that's something that has changed, and it affects the way we look at the halacha very clearly. Yes, Warren? Yes.
He just mentions that legit and whatever other procedures they may have done.
Correct.
So there's a distinct difference between advice and performing procedures.
Right. Warren asks, I just gave the example of bloodletting. That's an action. That's not simply advising, telling somebody you should, you know, go for a walk or whatever it is. So we are definitely going to need to distinguish. And that brings me to my next question, which is, if the Shulchan Aruch believes that you're not allowed to take payment for this mitzvah, why does he allow you to take payment for strain and time lost from other pursuits where you would have made money? Why is it okay to take money for Torah and Batala, for strain and time lost? So the answer seems to be that they're not viewed as part of the essential mitzvah. The mitzvah could have been performed, theoretically, without the strain. It depends on the particular circumstance involved. They're not considered part of the essential mitzvah. So this is all one source. This is the Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara. However, the Torah very clearly assumes that the doctor will be paid, right? You recall that when somebody wounds somebody else, they are responsible to pay 5 different kinds of compensation, right? Nezek, Tsar, Ripui, Sheves, and Boshes. The one we're going to focus on right now is Ripui. You pay medical bills, because the Torah says that if a person assaults somebody else and harms him, Virapo Yirape, he is responsible to heal that person. You're familiar with the source because that's the classic source for medical care within the Torah. So it is a given, and all the sources take it as a given. As a matter of fact, there's one funny line in the Gemara, source number 4. The case in which the assailant says to his victim, yes, I have to pay you medical bills. However, I have a brother-in-law, and he's a doctor, and he'll treat you for free. So I'd like you to go to my brother-in-law as your doctor. So the Gemara says, V'yamar le maisina asya demagin b'magan. If he says, the assailant says, I'm going to bring you a doctor who's going to heal you for nothing. Amar le asya demagin b'magan magan shave. He says, the doctor who heals for nothing is worth nothing. The victim is entitled to say that, but the underlying assumption is that they're allowed to charge, right? Otherwise, the Gemara doesn't make any sense. So how am I supposed to resolve the, on the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch saying you can't charge, and on the other hand, the fact that we do assume that they are charging? How would you resolve this problem? Well, at least one solution is the easy solution. Right? The easy solution is to say the charging that the Gemara takes for a given and the Torah takes for a given is the one the Shulchan Aruch permitted, which is payment for strain or time lost from other pursuits. That's the easy way to take it, and Ramban takes it that way. If you take a look at source number 5, Ramban, of course, is before the Shulchan Aruch, but he is already working with the assumption that one isn't supposed to take payment because it's a mitzvah. So he writes, Ule'in schar refua. As far as wages for healing, nirali demutter lito mehen schar batala v'tircha. He says, yeah, you're allowed to take payment for your strain, payment for your time, aval schar halimud asur. However, not for teaching. In other words, he says simply, you're allowed to take certain payments, and presumably, he doesn't actually say this explicitly, but presumably that's what everybody was assuming in the Torah, in the Gemara, is that that's the payment that you're going to take. Now, I should note here, when we talk about schar tircha ubatala, payment for time lost, right, or payment for strain, we shouldn't assume that that's some minimal, small amount of money, right? You ever go to the auto mechanic? And they break down based on parts versus labor, how much they're going to charge you for the part, how much they're going to charge you for the labor. Labor may be a very large number, and may in fact be higher than parts. If you take a look at source number 6, you find something remarkable. Rabbi Chiel Michal Epstein, writing in Lithuania, in Novardok, in the beginning of the 20th century, says, Kishakosev lo lebeis harokeach litein kach v'kach. When you write a prescription, you send a message to the pharmacy saying, give this person such and such, havi schar tircha, payment for that is payment for strain. Umutar, and he says, you're allowed to take payment for the effort involved in writing a prescription. Right? I mean, how much effort is actually involved in writing a prescription neatly? Now you can just type it out. It's cheating. But he's willing to consider that. But since Eliezer Waldenberg disagreed, he felt that that's a little much. But in terms of batala, even if you don't consider it schar tircha, even if you don't consider it to be a great strain such that you could charge for the strain of writing out the prescription, nonetheless, when it comes to batala, the idea of we're going to pay him because he's not engaged in some other pursuit, we come back to the point that was made earlier regarding the fact that doctors today don't have other trades, generally speaking. And that means that schar batala is going to be a very large number. Schar batala is going to be not what I am paying you for the 40 minutes that I was sitting in your office and you were running tests or whatever it was, but actually I am paying for the fact that you devote your life to this pursuit. That's the idea. If you take a look at source number 7, we find this idea in Tosfos in Maseches Bechorah. It's the same Gemara that we saw in source number 3. He's dealing with the issue of taking payment for judging in this particular excerpt. And he says, "Ve'ein lismoa al dayane gzeros shebirushalayim shayunotlin scharan mitrumas halishka." He says, "Don't be surprised by the famous judges of Yerushalayim who were paid from the half shekel donations that people made to the Beis Hamikdash." "Debalav taima de'agar de'batala de'muchach shari hasam kevan dechol iskam haya alze." He says, don't be bothered by the case of those judges in Yerushalayim. He says, first of all, they're paid for their time that's invested there. this agar batala, schar batala, payment for the time lost. And he says, aside from that, they didn't have any other work. This was their career. And they needed to survive. So they're not just taking payment for the time they're hearing this particular case, but they're taking payment for life. So in other words, what that means is, the physician is able, under the rubric of schar batala, the physician is able to say, here is what it costs me to live. That is what I'm going to break down among the number of patients who I have in order to determine what I am able to charge. And that is indeed brought by many sources. Ramban brings it in Taras HaAdam, the Radvaz, more modern sources, Halacha Refuah, Tara Medina, Nishma Savram, Chaim David Alevi, they all bring this point that because today the physician is doing this as they're living, so under Schar Batala, the physician is able to include what it costs to live. Now, there is an exception. Yeah?
Just going back to source 6 for a second. Right now, we just write a prescription, and the pharmacy simply puts the pills in the bottle and gives it to the patient.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that at that time, they had to actually formulate what was going to go into that prescription, whatever it is that the patient was going to get. So it could have been, I don't mean bat wings and, you know, all the rest of the stuff that...
Well, he's in the beginning of the 20th century, so hopefully there's something more sophisticated than bat wings. The snake oil. In all seriousness, that what it meant to write a prescription in Novardok 120 years ago. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't getting parchment. Yeah, it wasn't he wasn't hiring a sofer. So how hard it could have been. Yeah, if you're going to tell me it's the time he has to spend thinking through what to do, then I'm going to argue that that's not part of writing a prescription. That's part of his thought process. But I think there is a major, not major, but it comes up from time to time, exception to what we're allowing here. Even if I say, schar batala is your wages for devoting your life to medicine, what about the following case? You're in shul on Sunday morning, and somebody comes in, you're not on call, you're not doing anything professional at the time, you're just taking off your tefillin, and somebody comes in and they need medical advice. Right? That's what they, they ask you this and this. I woke up with a headache this morning, whatever it was. You can't claim schar batala there, because you weren't functioning in a medical capacity at that time. You weren't serving as a physician right then. It's only when you actually have this batala, the time that you have devoted as time for medical care. You may have other reasons to be able to charge them. We'll have to get to that. But the after hours, right. But my point is, if you're going to say it's schar batala, it has to actually be batala. It has to be time lost that you could have used for something else. That's what they. That's what we're talking about. But that's the first justification for charging. The Shulchan Aruch has told us you can't, except that you may. Yeah. Yeah. Right, but it's from something else that was going to earn you money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not that, everything takes you away from something.
Right.
So we have the Shulchan Aruch saying, because this is a mitzvah, and you may not charge for a mitzvah, as learned from Moshe and teaching Torah, therefore you can't charge for medical care, except you can for strain and time lost from other pursuits, and somebody who dedicates his life to providing medical care is then going to be able to charge for his life, for his ability to survive. That's one. But there are two more justifications which are important to see. The second justification is that people who need physicians are willing to pay more. And they have the right to accept whatever terms they want, as long as they're informed up front of what those terms are. If you take a look at source number 8, I brought you the Taz, writing on the Shulchan Aruch, where he says this. He says, Kevan shekvar hisna imo v'ischayev negdo chayev l'shalim. Kevan delava leidi dey l'chudei ramya mitzvah zos. He says, since you made a condition at the start of treatment, and he obligated himself, the patient obligated himself to pay, so since the mitzvah is not incumbent upon this doctor alone of healing, there are other doctors out there. He could have gone to somebody else. It's not as though I'm endangering him by saying no. When I made this agreement with him, it was a legitimate agreement. others could have gotten training, and others could have healed him. So that's the argument of the Taz, is that you stipulate whatever you like at the outset. What's that? Yeah. You are allowed to stipulate. Yeah. What's the problem?
Because it says here that many things that you can't charge for. Let me put the question. When are you allowed to stipulate? Under what condition?
Right. So what the Taz seems to be saying is not necessarily that you are justified in having set this as your amount of money, but that the patient, having agreed, is obligated to hold up his end of the bargain. That's what we're saying. In other words, I say to him, this is my schar tircha, this is my schar batala. It's going to cost you $1,000 for, for a throat test for strep throat. That's what I decided I'm going to charge you, because it was a big strain for me. So the patient said, okay. Well, the patient's out of luck when he complains, because he shouldn't have said okay. That's the argument that the Taz is bringing here. Alana, you were going to...
begs the question about, is the doctor really allowed to charge? Like, so yes, you're saying here basically buyer beware. You know, if the patient agrees to pay it, then, you know, fine, go ahead. Mm-hmm. But it still doesn't get at the original question about, you know, why is the doctor allowed to charge?
Right. And I could take it in one of two ways. I could say that what we're saying is, you're not supposed to be charging, but if you say, I'm only going to do this if you pay me, and the patient agreed, then it's the patient's problem. That's one way I could look at it. The other way I could look at it is, it's where you stipulated an unreasonable sum for tircha and bittul, but the patient agreed. Right? I could say it either way. Either this is the justification, and you're right, the doctor's not supposed to charge. But having said it up front, and the patient having agreed, that's just the way it is. Or alternatively, this is where you stipulated a particular number for time lost from other pursuits. There was a hand. Yeah.
There are really two sides of the argument. One side of the argument is the doctor allowed to charge, but the other side of the argument is the patient obligated not to tell or ask for advice or direction for anything other than life-threatening emergency on Shabbos. I mean, the patient should have an obligation to not tell the doctor about his.
It should know
the doctor's trying to
dive
on Shabbos.
Why are you bringing Shabbos into this? Why this is a weekday? This is it doesn't matter. About it. Don't bring Shabbos into it. But we're going to get to Shabbos, God willing. That's our third. That's our third case. But right now we're on a weekday, and I would say that we've said on other occasions that, you know, people have an obligation to go to the doctor if they're sick, whether it's life-threatening or not. So that means that the patient is justified in pursuing care. Eddie and then Leah. Yeah.
So we talked briefly before about OMIC. Is this halachas all fine in OMIC system? Are we talking about the doctor charging or about the patient paying?
So I'm going to come back to the OMIC question. It's a good question. Hold the thought. I have to come back to it.
Leah.
Good. So Leah anticipates source number 9. Flip the page. And the problem with the position taken by the Taz. It's a Gemara in Bava Kamma. Hareshaya boreach mi beis ha'asurin. Somebody has been held in prison and he is fleeing. Leave aside why he was in jail in the first place. The v'aisa ma'avores lefanav. It had to do with a doctor. No. V'aisa ma'avores lefanav. And there's a ferry there in front of him. So Amar lo told dinar v'ha'avi reini. And he says to the person running the ferry, accept a dinar and take me across. And the assumption is that dinar is much more than standard wages for a river crossing. So he said to him, here's $1,000,000, just take me across the river, they're after me, I have to get across. Ein lo ela scharo. So having then crossed the river, the ferry person is not able to say, I want what you promised me. He can only take whatever the going rate is for a river crossing. Here's 25 cents or whatever it is. He's not allowed to charge more than that. Alma, we see, Amar le Meshada ani bach, that this person who is now across the river can say, I was only fooling you when I did it because I wanted to make sure you would take me across the river. I was scared that if I got there and you were getting the standard fee for a river crossing, you would take your time, you would say, you know what, I'm not interested right now, I'm off right now, I needed to give you an incentive to take me across. And after having crossed, he's able to say, eh, just kidding. So how does that square with the idea that the patient is going to be held to whatever agreement the patient made in the first place? The patient said, I really need this surgery. I really need this medication. I'll pay you anything you ask. But he only said it in order to save himself from whatever suffering he was experiencing. So how do I square these two? It's not an even negotiation between the parties. So for this, I point you to Ramban in source number 10. Ramban writes, Im hisna bischar harofe harbe chayav litein lo. If someone stipulates a large sum of money that he's going to pay the doctor, he has to pay it. Shechachmaso machar lo ve'ein la damim. Because the doctor sold wisdom to the patient, even though we've said you're not allowed to pay for, you're not allowed to charge for knowledge. Nonetheless, he says what you're really providing is wisdom he doesn't have. Ve'ein la damim. That doesn't have a fixed value. Meaning, there is such a thing as a going rate for crossing a river. There is no such thing as a going rate for the medical care. Now, what Ramban is saying may have been true in 13th century northern Spain. It's not true today, right? Today, you have all sorts of systems where they will define exactly what a particular medical service is worth. And so that may cause us to revisit what Ramban is saying here and say that, in fact, there is a cap on what he's able to charge. You're not able to say, I'm going to charge an infinite number. But that's the point that Ramban makes, and Rama quotes that as halacha in Choshen Mishpat. He says, the worth of the doctor's knowledge is huge, and therefore you can't necessarily limiting them to whatever small amount, you could say whatever it is that you agreed to, you agreed to. And that's the thinking that informs what the Taz says here. The Taz's position is, the doctor is indeed allowed to charge more as long as he lets you know up front. So that was the second resolution. Again, a problem that we're trying to solve in the first place is that the Shulchan Aruch has said the doctors are not allowed to charge, but all these various gemaras indicate that he is charging. So our first answer was he's charging only strain and time lost from other work. Our second answer is it's what the patient agreed to in the first place. And then the third answer is that society needs physicians, and therefore society is willing to pay more. The Gemara in Bava Basra, which I quoted you in source number 11, is the classic source for this. It has many applications in halacha. The Rashon b'nei ha'ir lahasnos al hamidos v'al ha'sha'arim v'al schar po'olim u lahasial kitzasan. The community is entitled to make conditions for whatever the measures are that will be used, the set prices in the community, the wages for workers, and decide, this is what so-and-so earns, this is what so-and-so earns, this is for the sake of the community. The community is entitled to do that, and even to fine people who break the rules. So the community is entitled to say, yes, doctors are not allowed to charge. However, if we don't provide an incentive to doctors, then we aren't going to have any doctors. And therefore, we are going to determine that this is what people pay. And that's the third argument. And this takes us to Eddie's question about the OHIP point, that if the society has said, this is what we are willing to pay, the doctor is fine saying, well, this is what I'm going to accept. Because the community has decided this is what we need in order to make sure that we have physicians, and particularly for people who are dealing in the type of risky situation that doctors are dealing with. The Shulchan Aruch discusses in source number 12 the issue of witnesses for a get. There are people who are going to be witnesses for a bill of divorce. And it writes that, source number 12, V'yesh omrim demasnenim ha'edim shim yekalkalu ha'get, she'yishalmu oso, Some say you are allowed to stipulate that if the witnesses ruin the get, if they botch the job somehow, with their signature or with the or with something else within the proceeding, they are going to have to pay for a new one. But because of that, they're also allowed to take great payment because they're endangering themselves. Oh, mitam da edim asurim lisa agrusha. Alternatively, maybe the reason they're allowed to take money is because once they serve as witnesses on the get, they are now not allowed to marry the divorcee. That's one of those rules to prevent conflict of interest issues. But the point for us, the point for our discussion is, the doctor accepts great risk in practicing medicine, and therefore the doctor is justified in accepting whatever the community says, because the community says we want people to undergo that risk. We want people to take that risk. And more, as I noted in source number 13 from Rabbi Gedalia Rabinowitz, he notes, doctors spend many years in medical school, they pay a lot in tuition, so society has to recognize there are huge obstacles for people to prevent them from serving as physicians. You have to provide an incentive to get them to overcome those obstacles. That's the third argument. Yes.
So it follows from that the doctor can't decide for himself how much he can charge, because then it's up to the community.
Right. It would seem that the community should then be the one doing this, unless the community is going to say, this is what we've decided. We've decided that doctors get to do whatever they want. In other words, the community has it within its discretion to decide how it's going to provide this compensation. Yes?
When you say risk, what are we talking about? What risk is there?
Malpractice. Not only lawsuits, but the concern for themselves. If a doctor does something wrong and harms a patient, that can be incredibly traumatic, and there are all sorts of things that come into play, not just the financial risk.
The risk of getting sick from the
patient. Yeah. Also true, contracting disease.
In source 11, we assuming that when you translate it as wisdom, is that the same as knowledge, or
number 10.
There are differences between doctors in terms of their expertise, in terms of their being able to diagnose.
But you went to this doctor. In other words, if I trust this doctor, that shows that I have now demonstrated that I consider his wisdom to be in that priceless category.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, and then.
When we're talking about wisdom, though, when we're talking about, because if you go back to the first source, if his wisdom is teaching and conveying knowledge, then according to our first source, he's not allowed to actually charge for that. Or are we talking about...
No, so what we're saying is the patient has now said, I accept, I want to pay for this. In other words, this is what I'm willing to pay. What the doctor has charged, I am willing to pay. And yes, whatever you call it, wisdom, strain, doesn't really matter so much.
But if he's charging for wisdom, it's again violating the mitzvah.
If he's charging for wisdom, no, because I could read it as he's charging for his strain. He's charging for the effort that's involved, from him. The patient is saying, the reason I am willing to pay is because of the wisdom that he is going to impart to me. It's not that he is saying, I am charging for my knowledge. He's saying, I'm charging for my time. The patient says, why am I willing to do this? Because of the wisdom, and the wisdom has no fixed value. That's the way I would read this line. I think that's the accurate way to read the line. Warren.
Service, yep. But you reached your cap.
Yep.
So it's
Right. So when I began by saying that I did this as a two-part shiur, Acharya Shamayim, that was something that I went into at that point, and blended capitation and all this other fun stuff that I learned about. But I felt that it was a little bit of a detour, and I wanted to do this in one session. So what I'm going to do when I send out the email to those who signed in, I'm going to send the link to the audios from there, and you can hear a little bit there about the different methods and the propriety of a socialized system versus a system in which the doctors get to say whatever they, to stipulate whatever they're going to receive. It's a good question. It's a little more complicated than simply the way we're presenting it as a general rule. So that's our first vignette. That brings us to the second one. We've now licensed the doctor to charge. So now the follow-up question is, Paul, a dentist who works in a disadvantaged area, is frequently faced with patients who say they can't pay their bills. Is Paul permitted to refuse to treat them? So at this point, anybody who's concerned about what the answer to that one is going to be, is he entitled to say, I'm not going to treat? So we have already seen that there is a mitzvah of treating. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at source number 14, the Gemara at the end of Kiddushin has the classic line, Ato shebarofim legehinom. The good doctor, or the best of doctors, is going to Gehenna. I mean, we've given various explanations for this over the years. In the Shiurim, there's a wide range of explanations. But take a look at Rashi in source number 14. He says, Eino mishaber libo lamakom. He says, the physician who is good, who knows he's good, lacks humility. He doesn't subdue his heart before Hashem. Upa'amim shahoreg nefashos. And sometimes he kills. In the course of mistakes. I think that's a separate point. In other words, first of all, lack of humility. Second is the harm he may cause. And then third, v'yesh biyado l'rap os ha'ani ve'eino merape. He has the ability to cure the patient who can't afford to pay, and he says, no, not going to do it. Not going to do it because this patient isn't going to charge me. Isn't going to pay me, I'm sorry. Isn't going to pay me. So that would seem to say, oh boy, you better take care of the patient regardless of whether the patient can pay or not. Now, earlier we saw a reference in one of the earlier sources to the argument of, there are other doctors. I'm not robbing him of healthcare. The Taz, I think, made the point that he doesn't have to go to me. He could go to somebody else. However, the Talmud Yerushalmi writes, not everyone is healed by every doctor. Right? Not everyone can be healed by every physician. Sometimes you have someone who's an expert or who has seen this particular thing before, who specializes perhaps in this area, and not every doctor would be able to provide it. Sometimes the relationship between doctor and patient is such that this particular doctor-patient relationship works. You go to another doctor, and it's not going to work at all. Not only that, take a look at source number, responding to that, I should say, take a look at source number 15. If you're going to make the argument that every doctor is obligated because maybe they're the one who can provide special care, then you can create a really big problem for doctors. Take a look at number 15 from Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham and his Nishmas Avram, quoting Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth. He says, "Umayiya adam sheyesh lo ne'emanus rak legabe rofe mesuyam." What are you going to do in the case where the patient only trusts this particular doctor? V'im ki yesh rofim bechinam, avarotim dafka zeh shelokach kesef. What if there are clinics available where you could be treated for free? But he says, "I want this specialist who charges." That should have been payment in the price. I don't know what I was doing in the English there. Okay. Ha'im kofen ozo l'rapos b'chinam. Are we going to force him to heal for nothing? To say, well, you're the doctor for this particular patient. That's a very difficult argument. So what we're saying is, number one, there is a mitzvah to treat. Number two, there is this moral consideration that Rashi brings in for the patient who says, I am not going to heal unless they charge me. And when the physician says, there are other doctors, we have the Yerushalmi responding, but maybe you're the doctor who can cure this person, granted Rav Neuwirth's statement that you can take that too far, And then you're going to say that all doctors have to offer their services for free. More than this, Beis Din is actually able to force somebody to engage in a mitzvah without charging. The question was raised earlier about the Moel. Now we get to the case of the Moel. The Rama, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, writes, indeed, it's in Shulchan Aruch, right here in source number 16, Vim omeid bimerdo. If a Moel refuses, he says, I am not going to circumcise for free. Vein yada ish maseges laseis lo scharo, and the father can't afford to pay him. Avi kamisha ein lo av. So in that case, we treat the child who needs the bris as somebody who doesn't have a father, in which case Beis Din takes over. The rabbinical court is obligated then to arrange a circumcision. And therefore the court is able to compel the Moel to do the bris.
Why can't the court pay the Moel?
Because courts don't have to pay. The house always wins. That's the rule. In all seriousness, the Vilna Gaon explains that Beis Din is always able to compel performance of a mitzvah. That's a rule across the board. Beis Din can compel people to perform mitzvahs. The Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg is a slightly different formulation in source number 17, in which he distinguishes between the medical case and the bris milah case. He says, "Hare nimog ze lo shayach benidoneinu." He says, Rabbi Isserles' logic in the bris milah case isn't really relevant here. Im lo shenomer gamkein de be'en yad acholam aseges l'rapayis atzmo chol al habezdin shehema yad aniyim chiyuv l'rapos es hadal hazeh mikoa chiyuva de chiyuva torah b'hashevo so lo l'rapos avedas gufo. He says, the argument that Rabbi Isserles makes in the bris milah case is not relevant here unless what we're going to say is that if a patient cannot afford to heal himself, then the court, as the arm of needy people, has an obligation to heal this person, because the Torah says you have an obligation to restore people's health to them. And since they have an obligation to restore his health to him, therefore they have the ability to compel this doctor to go cure the patient. In other words, it's not that you're forcing the doctor to do his mitzvah. You're forcing the doctor to do the Beis Din's mitzvah. Right? That's the difference between the Vilna Gaon's way of looking at it and the way that Rabbi Waldenberg paints it. In the first case, it's the doctor's own mitzvah. In the second case, it's actually the Beis Din's mitzvah. But either way, it seems like Beis Din is able to force a physician to treat and not take payment for it. Now, how far will this go? Right now, I would have assumed this is just like a life or death case. Right? That's what I would have thought. But not necessarily. If you take a look on the last side, source number 18. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Tzirilson, writing in Russia in the early 20th century, in his work, Asei Alavanon, he says, the Gemara in Bava Kamma says, Vashevo so lo, you shall restore his health to him, from which we learn, he says, Dashavas gufo mi deoraisa, there's a biblical obligation to restore his body, his health, to him. And he says, Pshita delav davka Hashavas kol gufo. He says, it's obvious this doesn't just refer to restoring his entire body, meaning a life and death case, Hei chashu kula besakana, Ela duha dinami Hashavas ever echad me evrei ha'adam. The same rule will apply regarding saving part of his body. That indeed, you would say that the Beis Din can compel him. So that brings up the question of work actions. Right? What happens if doctors are going on strike? Is a doctor allowed to go on strike? So this came up as a practical issue back in the early 80s. In 1983, there was a strike in the hospitals in Israel. And there were a lot of questions surrounding this. So first of all, I want to point you to Nishmas Avram in source number 19, Rabbi Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham, who says, you know, what should really happen is that Beis Din should be the one to manage this. In other words, if the doctors feel they're not being paid appropriately, and the employer, whoever the employer is, whether it's the state, the hospital, whatever, feels that they're paying appropriately, then it's up to rabbinical courts to actually manage the negotiations. However, since we don't live in a world in which that's going to happen, so you have to deal with the question in practice, what happens in a case of dispute? So Rabbi J. David Bleich had an article that I referenced in source number 20, and you can get it online, it's freely available, discusses what happened in 1983. In the article, he discusses what happened in 1983, not in source number 20. It's a different piece of the article. And what he says there is, in fact, the Kloisenberger Rebbe said, you're not allowed to go on strike. He ruled for the doctors who consulted him that they were obligated to go back to work. Rav Shlomo Gorin prohibited going on strike, but he said you can demand your fee in advance. Just like we said earlier, you can stipulate whatever you want, and if a patient says he's going to pay, then you're entitled to do that. I'm going to come back to that because it's not so clear cut, but that's what he said. And then Rav Yitzchak Weiss and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said you can go on strike provided that you do two things. Number one, you have to maintain minimum staffing levels to save lives, which Rabbi Bleich notes in his article, that may work short term. But if you try to keep minimum staffing levels over time, things are going to break down. That's why we don't normally use minimum staffing levels. But that was one condition. And the other condition was you couldn't take any action that would keep you from treating patients well. So at one point, there was talk of a hunger strike. But if you're going to have a hunger strike, you're not going to be able to treat patients properly. So they said the hunger strike was not allowed. But regarding Rav Gorin's advice of stipulating in advance, Rabbi Bleich notes in source number 20 that doesn't exactly work. Why is it that it's okay for the doctor to stipulate in advance? What was our justification?
The patient is getting direct benefit, but in a group situation.
The patient agreed to pay was the justification, right? But in the case in Israel, in the case when you're going on strike, who's paying? The government, not the patient. So therefore, this idea of stipulating in advance doesn't work. Now, unless you stipulate it to the hospital, and the hospital says we're okay with it, which would defeat the whole strike thing. You solved the strike. So in answer to the question, though, and there's a lot more to say about this issue. This is a brief look, but it does seem problematic for a physician to refuse to treat without payment, even though we've said the physician is entitled to charge. Last issue. Yeah?
I just want to add a comment, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So there is something very relevant here in terms of today. So in 2014, the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario, not Canada, Ontario, put in a new regulation that a physician is not allowed to turn a patient away if the patient wants something that is against the doctor's beliefs.
Right.
For example, a woman who's not married comes and wants a prescription for birth control pills.
Right, so he has to refer. Yeah.
He's not allowed. He doesn't have to actually write the prescription, but he, if it's against his or her beliefs, but he has to give one or two names of physicians knows will write the prescription.
Right, and where it's... It depends on... There are all sorts of... I don't want to get too far afield within this, because this has the potential to go very far afield. But but as I understand the rule, and I'm going to ask for corrections later at the end rather than now, but as I understand the rule, it depends a little bit on whether there are others available and a referral to someone who's going to be competent to do it then, and the doctor may be compelled to do more than refer. In the event that he doesn't have somebody who will provide the treatment now under these terms, he may actually be required to do it himself, not just to refer. There's a lot to say about that. We've discussed it a little bit in some other contexts, and I'm glad to go back to it at the end, but there's a lot still that we have to see. Albert, you were going to study something on the striking issue, the payment issue?
Really happening long term,
right? So what you're asking is a good question. Fundamentally, this is about balancing personal, individual clinical cases versus a broad and amorphous need of society. Because you can't point to a specific case as the case that's going to make or break it for physicians. Yeah, in any individual case, this doctor has this patient standing in front of them saying, I can't pay. Saying to the doctor, you have to take this patient on, is not going to drive all doctors out of Ontario. At the same time, a policy of saying all doctors are going to have to do this for all patients will drive them out of Ontario. So that becomes a very hard calculation to make. And that's why, I think that's why you see Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yitzchak Weiss in the case of the strike in Israel in 1983, okaying the strike as long as they kept certain levels of care. Because they're wrestling with the problem of, on the one hand, clinically you have to treat, but as a policy, saying if you force that, you aren't going to have any physicians. Okay. Our third point, this issue of accepting payment for taking call on Shabbos. So the problem fundamentally is that you're not allowed to take payment for working on Shabbos. And this is a straightforward Gemara in Bava Metzia, source number 21. Ha-socheres ha-po'el, by the way, one of the things that I left out from when I did this as a two-part class was the question of, if doctors are really obligated to treat, are doctors ever allowed to take a vacation? Someone calls you during dinner, are you allowed to not answer the phone? So there's a whole other area of this. When I send out the link, you can catch it on the audio. That was its own discussion. But the Gemara here in source number 21, Hasocher es hapoa lishmor es hapara, if you hire a worker to guard the para aduma, the red heifer. So, ein nosnim lo schar Shabbos, you may not pay him for guarding on Shabbos. Now, how are you paying him in general if he's doing a mitzvah? It's a detour, it's a side topic I'm not going to get to right now. But, even though he's not violating Shabbos, this isn't about Chilul Shabbos. What he's doing is simply watching the cow as it grazes or does whatever it does, making sure that nobody's going to come in and try to ride the animal, steal the animal, inflict a wound on the animal. That's all he's doing, is simply watching the cow. Nonetheless, you're not allowed to pay him for Shabbos. And therefore, if you take a look at source number 22, Hasocher es hapoa lishmor zraim, you hire somebody to sit outside your field and just make sure that nobody enters. And again, he's not breaking Shabbos in any way, shape, or form. O davar acher, or for something else. Eino nosein lo schar Shabbos. You're not allowed to pay him for Shabbos work. So based on that, I would have said, you're not allowed to take payment for medical care on Shabbos. You can't take payment for these things, you can't take payment for that either. However, there are four rationales that are offered to permit, and there are some nuances between them, and I'm going to go through them quickly. The first rationale is probably the best known rationale, and that is that of Havla'ah. Havla'ah means, literally, it's absorbed in other payment. And what that means in terms of this is learned from the case of the Chazan. If you take a look at source number 23, it's a comment by the Mordechai in Ksuvos. Mordechai ben Hillel writes, Pasak harav Rabbeinu Baruch. Rabbeinu Baruch ruled, Mikan yesh lichshash al hachazanim shemaskirim osam lispalo b'shabbos. He says, based on this prohibition against payment for Shabbos work, it seems like you can't take money to be a chazan on Shabbos. V'harav Rabbeinu Shmuel, in some editions it says, Bini, my son Rabbeinu Shmuel, Omer de'ein iser, not prohibited, d'hanosin lo schar l'kayem ha-mitzvah l'hispalel, because you are paying him to fulfill the mitzvah of davening. Now, what that means in terms of the mitzvah, I'm going to come back to. That's not our point immediately. But the Mordechai has just said, Chazanim do this. They hire themselves out to serve as Chazan on Shabbos, but it could be okay. Now, take a look at source number 24, where Rabbi Yisrael of Bruna, the Mahari Bruna, quotes the Mordechai, but gives a different reason for permitting. I'm going to come back to the Mordechai's point about it being a mitzvah. He says, "Venerally, da'af ki haygavna kavar hi muskeres lekule alma chashuv behavla v'yotza b'dayanim mishum sakana." The Mahari Bruna is dealing with a case of a midwife, and he says that the midwife is actually hired by the world to serve as a midwife. She's hired already by everyone, and so it's considered havla. And what that means is that when you pay her, you're not really paying her for this particular time when she came to help the woman give birth on Shabbos. You're paying her for serving as a midwife globally. Like we said before about paying somebody for their time and the fact they're not engaged in some other career. So Marie Bruna says in the first half of his comments, he says, what we're doing is we're paying her for making herself into a career midwife. So you're not paying for Shabbos things in particular. Yes?
This is the same thing as if you make yourself available to be on the full schedule, then some of the things of midwife, because you're available to a community on call, and then call can be in Shabbat.
Or you don't even need to be that narrow with it. You could say the fact that you make yourself available as a doctor in general. Right? They're paying as part of compensation for you being a doctor, so that you will choose this as your career. You're right about the call, but I think we can say it even broader. And so Rabbi Waldenberg writes in source 25, I'm going to come back to the second half of 24, but Rabbi Waldenberg writes in source number 25, he says, included within those wages, I'm skipping the Hebrew in the interest of time, but included within the wages that she is going to receive is the fact that she's available to the community to serve as a midwife. So that's one justification, is we call it havlah, we call it absorption within the general payment for being a doctor. Yes, Jack? Right, so some want to take that further and say that you're paying for their preparation beforehand, and yes, that would also potentially fit in within this havlah concept, that you're absorbing it in with payment for other things, for non-Shabbos things. That wouldn't apply for? Well, it would. It would, because they also had to prepare, right? It isn't as though you're paying them just for this moment in time. Yeah?
It seems like this havlah works well with Dr. Dean was asking. Or if you're paying someone's salary, like a rabbi or a husband, you're paying for a whole year. It's not just for Shabbos, but you're paying fee for service. And you're calling the doctor, doctor, I want you to come now, I'm paying you now, and it's not Shabbos. How can you say something like that? Black and white.
Right. So I'm going to take us to our second approach. I could argue down, but I'd rather go to the second approach, because we have four approaches. And the second approach is that paying someone to do a mitzvah on Shabbos is okay. Like what the Mordechai quoted from Rabbeinu Shmuel, when he said, we're paying him to fulfill the mitzvah to daven, which means we've now gone from one end to the other. In the beginning of this year, an hour ago, we said we don't pay people for mitzvahs. Now we're saying the justification for paying someone on Shabbos is that you're paying him to do a mitzvah. And Rav Yitzchak Zalman Meltzer brings this as well. The idea that it's because it is indeed meant to be payment for a mitzvah. I believe I even brought... Yeah, if you flip the page to 26, the Shulchan Aruch writes, one may hire a chazan to daven on Shabbos, but there are those who permit, and he's quoting this view, that it is indeed a mitzvah. But there's a challenge to this. If that's true, then why is it in the Parah Aduma case, they said you can't pay for guarding the Parah Aduma on Shabbos? Isn't that also a mitzvah? So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, in source number 27, answered that what he said separate from the line that I brought you here, because he says is guarding the, I'm looking at what I have in number 27, it's not matching what I have in my notes, and I have to remember now which one is accurate. I believe what I have in my notes is accurate. I think that I made a mistake in the way that I entered it in number 27. So 27 isn't Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, it's somebody else. But Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan said, is guarding the Parah Aduma is not a specialty. Anybody can do it. It's just sitting watching a cow. And therefore, you could find someone to do it for free. Whereas the chazan has certain skills, and that's what justifies paying for the work of the chazan. But the bottom line for us is that paying for a mitzvah is going to be okay. That's the assumption. Paying for this mitzvah on Shabbos would be okay. Yes?
What do you say about the thing? That would apply for somebody who's on salary, like an Israelite who's on salary. But for doctors who are here, they're not really on salary. The only time they get paid from the hospital would be for the time they're on call.
Right, so again, I think that was Harold's point also. But I think that, number one, you can bring the non-Havla explanations. So I don't need havlah as my answer. We have the other options. But if you want to argue that point, my answer would still be that in the beginning we justified paying doctors, including in the case where it's for a particular, you know, a particular action, we justified paying them because we said we want to make sure they're going to devote their lives to medicine. So in that sense, it is broader than for this particular activity. I'm paying for their collective medical activity.
So paying it comes from two separate sources, theoretically.
Yes, correct.
The head here for this shul, many shuls that don't have a chazan, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they want a chazan, they bring them for 3 days, no slichos, no nothing, just 3 days.
Right. Right, so again, either I could say havlah and it's the time they prepared in advance, because they do prepare in advance, or I could say it's payment for a mitzvah and it's fine. The other two answers that I were about to give for the doctor will not apply well for the chazan, as you'll see. But those first two, I think you can say. But the third answer for the doctor is, it will be dangerous if they didn't show up. And that's, you know what, this is the piece that I brought you from Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. He did say it. It was a different piece of his same article. The idea is that if you say I'm not going to pay, they may not show up, and then you're out of luck. When you need the doctor, they won't be there. So yes, you're right. We don't like the idea of paying someone for what they did on Shabbos. Nonetheless, the Ma'ariv Bruna already mentioned it back on the previous side in source number 24. Perhaps if she knew they wouldn't pay her, she wouldn't come, or she would be slow in showing up. The same idea is mentioned by Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector in source number 27. The fact that we are concerned that they wouldn't show. Now, why do you need that answer when you already have the answer of Havlah? So Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg says something very sharp. There are a few answers to that, but I like what Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg said in particular. He said it in number 28, but I'm going to say it outside. He says, Havlah justifies the doctor accepting the payment. The need of the community, the danger, if they wouldn't show up, justifies the community paying it. Two different things. The community pays it because of the danger. If we don't pay, we're not going to have doctors showing up on Shabbos. But Havlah justifies the doctor accepting it. The doctor can't accept it on the justification of danger. That's a terrible thing to say. I wouldn't show up and save lives if they didn't pay me. The doctor can accept it under the grounds of Havlah. And that's the third approach.
It might apply to a special chazan on Rosh Hashanah.
Right. A special chazan, it'll be dangerous if they don't have that chazan?
That's the chazan you believe will...
Okay. Or if that's the chazan the shul actually agreed on. Yes.
One of the rationales for being able to call it from that is that you might not...
Right.
So there is that thought
process
that the doctor might not.
Yeah.
Well, then that's
why they let Hatzalah go home. Otherwise, they won't go in.
Right. I mean, the discussion about that is also a broader discussion. I didn't want to go into the question of Chilul Shabbos. I'm not saying that in order to question or challenge anything that is done. I'm just saying that there's more that goes into that particular issue. The last justification is brought in source number 29 by Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, who says, you know, when you cure them on Shabbos, hopefully they're healthy on Sunday too. So what they're paying for is the benefit they receive from you, which extends past Shabbos. It's sort of a nuance within Havlah. Yes, it's a very interesting approach. I don't think it really... I have a hard time saying it doesn't work, but you're paying for what they did, not for the benefit you received. I think there's no warranty on it. And if it doesn't last till Sunday, I'm going to take the money back. But that's within this issue of how we justify charging for Shabbos. A particular question came up in source number 30, was addressed by Dr. Avram Sofer Abraham, the question of payment for a regular shift and justification for accepting it. And Rabbi Neuwirth said that one is allowed to accept it. He quotes Rabbi Neuwirth as saying that it is accepted. First of all, because we say that the midwife is allowed to be paid. You can see it there. It's in source number 30. We say the midwife is allowed to be paid via Havlah. He said the midwife is allowed to be paid as a general statement, whether it's because it's a mitzvah or whether it's because of we need to make sure there are midwives or whatever the reason is. And he says, it's still called havlah because the pay stub is for the entire month. Granted that they break it out on the stub saying this is for what you did on each day and therefore Shabbos is enumerated separately, that's okay because fundamentally it is still within this principle of havlah. It's absorbed with the payment for a larger period of time. That's the justification. So again, to summarize in just a minute what we've said, and there's a lot more we could have said about all of these points, but again, I really want to do it in one session and not in two. The in terms of our first vignette and the question of what Sarah is able to consider in calculating her rate, yes, the Shulchan Aruch says you're only allowed to take payment for tircha and batala, time lost from other pursuits, and strain. However, in practice, one is able to expand that to being paid for one's, according to our first approach, being paid for dedicating one's career to medical care. In addition to that, the individual getting care is allowed to say, I accept that I will pay more. And the community is allowed, especially in the OHIP context, is allowed to say, this is what we are willing to pay. And then the patient will indeed be obligated to pay it. Our second question was, is the physician allowed to refuse to treat for free? And it doesn't look so good. It really doesn't. Although, from a policy perspective, it's bad to say, we're going to compel them all to treat for free because you will not have physicians anymore. And we do find some leniency in the area of the strike. Nonetheless, we found that Beis Din can compel people to do a mitzvah, and particularly in terms of executing the Beis Din's own obligation of taking care of people. We noted Rashi and Tosha Barofim Legei Hinom. It's hard to justify refusing to treat for free. And then finally, payment for taking call on Shabbos. We say that wages for work on Shabbos are prohibited. However, we have multiple rationales to permit, whether in the context of Havla'ah, saying that it's absorbed with payment for being available as a doctor in general, or because payment for a mitzvah done on Shabbos, like the Chazan, is fine, or because there would be danger if this person would ever not show up, or because you heal them so that they will be well during the week. There's a lot more to say, but we'll stop with that for now. I will stick around for questions. If you didn't sign in, please make sure to sign in because I want to be able to send you a follow-up, including the links to the longer version of this year. Thank you very much.